lights out, and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Danny and Sunday have crashed. They've got into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there, I'm Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds off the back of the Turkish Grand Prix this weekend. Sometimes Turkey can be exciting, sometimes Turkey can be boring, but Turkey can be a bit average like it was this weekend. We were just saying this just now before we started. I was quite excited about the race because there was a bit of rain and there was a lot of elements in there that made you think, oh, this could be good. You know, a few drivers out of position, bit of weather. This could be exciting. And it was all right, wasn't it? It was just a very average Grand Prix. I described it just now as the kind of Grand Prix you can put on in the background and kind of do other stuff and just every now and again glance over at the telly and see what's happening and go, oh, okay, yeah, not a lot's changed, and come back to it, can't you? It wasn't the world's most exciting race.
No, I turned the race on. I thought, oh, wet track, this will be good, because they hadn't really predicted rain for the Sunday all in the week leading up to it. So I thought, oh, this would be good. Hamilton starting in 11th, so he's going to be charging through, but can he overtake that easily on the wet track? And who's going to blink first and go for dry tyres? And there was a couple of other drivers out of position as well, Carlos Sainz being one of them. And I thought, this is going to be a really good, exciting race. And then it really wasn't. You know, we had the drama towards the end with the pit stops, and we'll come on to that with Hamilton in just a bit. I thought Carlos Sainz was brilliant. His overtaking at the end of the back straight was happening nearly every single lap in the opening moments of the race. Alonso had a nightmare, spun off on the first turn of the race, and then he took Mick Schumacher out later on in that lap. But apart from those highlights that I've just mentioned, you know, there wasn't that much action going on. They couldn't keep it on the track in wet conditions during practice. So I thought, well, there's going to be all kinds of mayhem and chaos here, but they all seem to do pretty well when it came to the race.
Yeah, and I think the only thing when you have rain in a race that kind of, it rains before the race, but then doesn't rain during the race like we had here. They put the intermediates on, they all kind of trot round and that's all fine. And then the intermediates kind of wear off to slicks. And then they go, well, might as well just leave these tyres on because they're working all right now. They're pretty much slicks. And because there's no sort of tyre dramas, there's no pit stops, there's no new bits of rain, kind of makes it just very mundane and going round in circles, doesn't it? But yeah, that's kind of what we had this weekend. I thought the only interesting thing really from the race was the fact that Hamilton has taken his engine penalty now. Max Verstappen has taken his engine penalty now. And it's really changed nothing, has it? They both kind of finished in very similar positions. You know, Max made the best of it. Hamilton not too bad in fifth. But they really did damage control from both sides, which means into the last few races, it's going to be fascinating how that plays out.
Yeah, so just to explain then, Hamilton only got a 10-place grid penalty because he only changed his internal combustion engine, whereas Max Verstappen was forced to change every single power unit component because it was all damaged in the crash he'd had with Hamilton at Silverstone earlier in the year. So he got sent to the back of the grid. Hamilton got sent down 10 places. That's the difference. So Hamilton may still need to change other elements of his power unit between now and the end of the season, whereas it looks as though, unless there's any big drama, Max Verstappen won't have to. So therefore, we're pretty much back to the level playing field. One thing I noticed, though, in Turkey and in Sochi a couple of weeks before was that the Mercedes seems to have a massive straight-line advantage in terms of speed over the Red Bull. Now, it hasn't been all like that for most of the season. Red Bull have pretty much matched them. But now it seems that Mercedes are pulling out that straight line speed on the straights. And there's a lot of circuits still to come with lots of long straights, including the last race of the year in Abu Dhabi, which has been changed and tweaked a little bit to make the racing more exciting. But I think Mercedes, power-wise, seem to have the upper hand at the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because there was a point in the season where the Red Bull was kind of, I thought, the better package. And I thought, you know, if they carry on like this and the Mercedes don't bring any new parts to the races and this is how it ends, you know, we're going to have a very interesting season here because I can see the Red Bull kind of stretching their legs. But like you said, it's gone the other way, isn't it? They've come back from the break and Mercedes seem to have kind of found something in the car. And I don't believe they're bringing massive upgrades or massive parts to the races, but for some reason, they've just kind of found something, haven't they? Like you say, to make the car look pretty good. And it's kind of working most circuits now. And I think that's the trick, isn't it? You know, the McLaren is a great example of a car that is very track specific at the moment. Certain tracks that McLaren goes to is superb and it's, you know, potentially a winning car. And then you've got other tracks it goes to where it's just very average and poodling around in the middle field. And the Red Bull and the Mercedes are different. They're kind of always up there, aren't they? But yeah, Mercedes have found something in that car and it's going to make it interesting the next few races. I mean, they're so close on points. Obviously, I think Mercedes are about 30 points ahead in the constructors. But as a driver, you know, there's literally a few points in it, and it's going to be a fascinating final few races of this season.
Yeah, just 6 points between Lewis Hamilton in second and Max Verstappen, who's leading the championship at the moment. We go to Austin, Texas next, which is a very power-intensive circuit. So what you see normally is that the Red Bull car does really well on low-speed corners, and the Mercedes car does really well on high-speed corners and long straights. Now, Austin, Texas has a mixture of both of those elements, so I'm hoping that they'll be fairly evenly balanced when we go to America, because the Red Bull will cope with the slow, twisty infield bits really well, and the Mercedes will do well from the high-speed corners and the long straights. And you'd think that they hopefully will balance each other out to give us a good, entertaining race. But, of course, it remains to be seen when we get to Austin, when we start the practice sessions, which of those two teams will be on top and have the advantage. And the other thing to remember is we talk constantly about the 2022 rule changes. The one thing that isn't changing for next year is the engines. So there's a freeze on engine development. So what they finish this season with in terms of engine and power unit is what they will do the entire 2022 season with next year. So if Mercedes can nail it by the end of this year and have a predominantly fast power unit, then they have a massive advantage going into the new rule changes for 2022.
The other thing I found quite interesting this week, I don't know if there's any beef between Alonso and Hamilton, but Alonso has had a couple of little jabs, a little cheeky couple of jabs in the press this year towards Hamilton. And he said this week that he thinks that Verstappen is so good because he just handles the pressure better, and he handles the pressure differently to a lot of the other drivers. And it's like he knows what to say to get inside Hamilton's head a little bit. I don't know if that comes from when they were together at McLaren as teammates, or whether there's some sort of beef with them or whatever, but he just seems to be making some sort of subtle little digs towards Hamilton, either being praising Verstappen or just saying something like, oh, that's a weakness of Hamilton's or whatever. But it's interesting because we do know that Hamilton, you know, if you get inside Hamilton's head, it's what Rosberg did in 2016.
Yeah.
You know, if you get inside Hamilton's head, you can beat him mentally. He's pretty unstoppable physically, you know, fitness wise, he's brilliant, and he's a pretty unstoppable driver in many ways. But we have seen you get into his head, Hamilton. He has a bit of a wobble, and we've kind of seen that. There's a few times this year he's had a wobble with Verstappen, isn't there? And, you know, obviously we had the thing at Silverstone where they had the crash. It's been a couple of times where Hamilton has kind of, I felt like, hit a backstop almost. And it's just fascinating to see some of the other drivers putting their two pennies worth in. And Verstappen, you know, just gets on with it, doesn't he? Just kind of, you know, whatever. I hate the press, you know, just crack on with it. Stop asking me stupid questions. And on he goes. It's going to be fascinating, the last half of this season.
I tell you what, you mentioned Alonso. We got into hot water this weekend with race director Michael Massey. Did you hear about the comment he made? It was a previous race where Lando Norris had crossed the white line on the pit entrance, or he'd missed the white line, and he didn't get a penalty. And Alonso made the comment this weekend, let's see which nationalities get penalties this weekend and which nationalities don't. So basically saying that if you're British, because most of the FIA are British, including the stewards and the driver stewards especially, that they tend to favour British drivers, which again was a pop at Norris, Russell, and of course Hamilton. And Michael Massey pulled him to one side after the driver's briefing, apparently, and went, listen, let me tell you now, there is no bias in my control room. Everything is fair, everything is equal. There were no need for you to make those comments, Alonso. So that was a bit fiery. But again, Alonso's very clever at playing those mind games. So that, again, could just be part of his sort of war of attrition when it comes to getting into Hamilton's head.
Yeah, and I think you see it a lot with Raikkonen as well. I think when a driver gets to that level of their career where they've been doing it for, you know, 20, 25 years, and they're so good at all the other parts of it, they play the mental game very well. You know, it's a trait you see with a lot of the more mature drivers. And again, you know, in the past, Hamilton has kind of played that game with Verstappen, I guess, where Verstappen's been a bit immature and made a few kind of rookie errors, and Hamilton smirked and kind of seen it come in, and, you know, I've been there myself type attitude. But yeah, no, the older drivers tend to sort of make these comments more so, don't they, and cause a bit of a stir.
Well, let's go back to the race itself then. It was a blinding drive for Valtteri Bottas. We haven't seen him win a race for nearly a year. And then he comes back and he sticks it on pole. Obviously, Lewis would have had pole had it not been for the engine penalty. But Bottas started on pole, kept the lead for the entire race and did a really good job. And again, demonstrated the raw power of that Mercedes on the straights especially. Helmut Marko described the Mercedes car and said it was like they were driving with the DRS flap open for the entire lap. That's just how fast they were. So Bottas did a brilliant job, I think, which is nice to see. And we've spoken about this before. Now the pressure's off a little bit because he knows he's going to Alfa Romeo next year. He seems to be more relaxed in the car and is just enjoying his final few races with Mercedes, which is great. Now, when it comes to Hamilton, of course, there was the pit stop controversy. In Sochi, he questioned the team when they told him to come into the pits as the rain started falling towards the end of the race. But eventually, a lap after that, the team basically ordered him in and he stuck with that. Now, in this race, and I think this is a really interesting comment that I think it was David Coulthard made, where he said, when the track is dry, becoming wet, that's a decision for the driver because he can feel the car underneath him. When it's wet, becoming dry, that should always be a decision for the team because they have the data and they can also see what other cars and teams are doing around them. So, for instance, in this instance, Vettel came in and put on slick tyres. And when he came out of the pits, it was like he was on an ice rink. It was just ridiculous. So therefore, the other teams can all see, right, slicks is definitely not the way to go because Vettel's just tried it and it hasn't worked at all. Lewis Hamilton, for instance, doesn't have that information. So when they called him in, he said no. He said no, it feels great. I think I can finish the race on these intermediate tyres. And the team are kind of going, yeah, we can see other things in the data here, Lewis. And I think in that instance, he should have just obeyed the team and come in because they have more information and certainly more information that they can pass to him via the radio. So in the end, they probably kept him out for 5 or 6 laps too long and eventually they called him in. Hamilton came in thinking the team knew what they were doing and of course they did, but they wanted to bring him in 6 or 7 laps before that. And what that meant was that he lost 2 places. That's why he was so frustrated when he came out and said, what position am I, man? And they said 5th. And he went, what? Well, that's just the wrong call. So it was kind of 6 of 1, 1/2 a dozen of the other, wasn't it, really, with the decision. But I think Hamilton needs to start relying on the team and the data that they have a little bit more.
Yeah, and I think, you know, his radio calls as well, he's done a big apology on Instagram this week just saying, you know, oh, guys, you know, don't believe everything you read in the press. There's no beef between me and the team. We're all getting on great. We've debriefed. We realise what mistakes were made and so on and so forth. You know, don't believe everything. But at the end of the day, when you make those radio calls, they're going to have a story there. They're going to say, well, look, Hamilton's disobeyed his team. Hamilton's angry with his team. Hamilton's frustrated with his team. The team are frustrated with Hamilton. These stories are going to come from those radio calls. And I think it almost, he needs to just calm it down a bit on the radio. I know that during the race, it's frustrating and, you know, the adrenaline's pumping and it's harder when you're in that kind of buzzy zone, I guess. But he needs to just be careful what he says on the radio. I think he could have played that a lot calmer, come across better on the radio. It's frustrating that he lost those extra couple of places, like you say. But if he had come in earlier, could he have fought back on track and overtaken those drivers and possibly ended up third? And I guess when it's this close in the championship, you know, you need every point you can get, and finishing 5th over 3rd is not great for him this year.
Yeah, I think Toto Wolff explained it really, really well after the race. He said if he had come in early, he could have fought back because, of course, the intermediate tyres, when they're new, they go through that graining thing where they have 4 or 5 laps where they really overheat and they it's almost undrivable. And, of course, because he came in so late, he basically had that graining phase from when he came out of the pits until the end of the race. If he'd have come in 6 or 7 laps early, the graining phase would have been out of the way and he could have really challenged for the podium in the last 4 or 5 laps of the race. But, of course, it didn't happen like that. So it is quite interesting to see, you know, you get a driver of Hamilton's calibre and all of his experience, he can still make errors in the car when it comes to making choices because the team just has so much more information than the driver does.
Yeah, you mentioned Bottas as well, who's driving amazingly at the moment. A story that caught my eye this week, potentially Andretti coming to Formula One. There's multiple sources that are saying the American racing team Andretti Autosport are closing in on a bit of a deal to be a major stakeholder in the Alfa Romeo Formula One team. Now, I sent this to you in the week, and my theory here was, I wonder if Bottas knows this. I wonder if Bottas is a big fan of Andretti Racing, if he thinks, well, this is going to be amazing for the team, you know, an injection of cash, an injection of a real racing pedigree, you know, and did he know all this information before he signed his long-term contract with Alfa Romeo, thinking, well, they, you know, they could be doing well, they could be at the top of the grid in the next couple of years. So maybe he's got all this information to make that deal, because he seemed very, when he signed that deal, he was very kind of like, I'm going to be team leader, I'm going to, you know, take this team to the next level, we've got this plan together, we got that plan together. He sounded very excited about a big long future plan that that team has got. So I wonder if it was related to this in some way.
Yeah, I think Andretti have had had moves and eyes on Formula One for many, many years, and I think they'll probably see this as a wonderful opportunity to get back into the sport. Interesting enough, Romain Grosjean, who's had a pretty decent rookie season in IndyCar, has now signed for the Andretti IndyCar outfit and will be driving for them next year. So, yeah, it looks as though things are falling into place. And if Bottas knew that, then you can understand why he was actually fairly smug when he signed that agreement. I thought, really, are you that smug to be going to Alfa Romeo, who traditionally for the last couple of years have been towards the back of the field? So yeah, hopefully he knows something we don't, and that's going to make it even more exciting next year.
Before we talk about America, let's get some facts and stacks. I can never say that correctly. Facts and stats and facts, whatever way around you want to do it, from our stat man from Lights Out. So let's get the latest. Here is Nikki.
Bottas wins for the first time in over a year. Sainz scores from 19th on the grid, and Alonso has an afternoon to forget. Here are the top stats from the 2021 Turkish Grand Prix weekend. Let's start with Saturday, and if not for a 10-place grid penalty, Lewis Hamilton would have taken pole position at a 31st different circuit. Instead, Valtteri Bottas inherited pole, making Mercedes the 5th different team to take pole at Istanbul Park, while Bottas is the 6th different driver to have started from the front of the pack in Turkey. This was Bottas' 18th pole position, which sees him move ahead of Jackie Stewart for 18th in the all-time list of F1's most prolific pole sitters. Bottas is now tied with René Arnoux as the driver with the most poles to have never won the World Championship. On Sunday, Bottas went on to become the 35th different driver to have taken 10 Grand Prix victories. Max Verstappen and Sergio Perez joined Bottas on the Turkish Grand Prix podium, making this the first time a Mercedes driver has won, with two Red Bull drivers joining him on the podium since the 2020 Bahrain Grand Prix. That podium combination is quite rare, having happened on only 5 other occasions. While Verstappen equaled Niki Lauda's tally of 54 podiums, Perez finished in the top 3 for the first time since the French Grand Prix. Next up, Carlos Sainz started 19th, but that didn't stop him from scoring points. With his 8th place finish, Sainz scored for a 9th consecutive race, equaling the longest point scoring streak of his career to date. The Spaniard has now started 19th or further back 10 times, and he scored on 6 of those occasions. Sainz's points make 19th the second furthest back grid slot from which points have been scored at the Turkish Grand Prix. The only driver to have scored from further back is Kamui Kobayashi, who started 24th and finished 10th in 2011. Esteban Ocon finished in 10th place, completing the entire race on just a single set of tyres. Excluding anomalies such as this year's one-lap Belgian Grand Prix or the 2016 Brazilian Grand Prix, which was red-flagged multiple times, it was the first time that a driver completed a full race distance without stopping for tyres or refuelling since Mika Salo scored the Tyrrell team's final points in F1 at the 1997 Monaco Grand Prix. And finally, Fernando Alonso started 5th at the Turkish Grand Prix, recording his best starting position in over 7 years. But he finished only 16th. It's the second time that Alonso has failed to score at Istanbul Park. He finished 10th in 2009, 1 year before the position awarded points. After a first lap spin, Alonso lost 11 positions from where he started. It's the equal most positions that the Spaniard has lost in a race which he has completed. He also fell 11 places down the order at the 2010 British Grand Prix. As well as equaling his own record, Alonso conceded the most positions for any driver in any Turkish Grand Prix to date. The previous record was 10 places lost by Heikki Kovalainen in 2009.
Thank you, Nicky. You can follow him across the race weekends at Lights Out on Twitter and Instagram. You can also see some amazing pro stats and facts between races if you're missing your Formula One fix. Now, one thing to mention there from those stats was Ocon. So Ocon's the only driver that completed the race on just the one set of intermediate tyres. He finished in 10th. And that kind of gives you an example of what might have happened if Hamilton had tried to finish the race on just the one set. He probably would have finished in fourth, fifth, or even sixth, because the tyres would have been so off towards the end of the race. And of course, there's a danger of getting a blowout because they're stripped down to the canvas. So it's a real difficult one in hindsight. I think the overwhelming consideration was that Hamilton, if he'd have come in when the team had asked him to, he probably would have got a podium. He left it too late, so when he did come in, the tyres weren't fired up for the remainder of the race, and that's why he finished in fifth place. Austin, Texas next. A track that you like, Scott?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of America in general, big fan of Austin, Texas, big fan of the state, Texas. It's one of my favourite places to go in America, but the track's really good as well. A lot of the drivers like it here as well. It's a real driver's circuit, isn't it? So I'm looking forward to some exciting things. And like you said before, it's kind of a mix between Red Bull and Mercedes, this circuit, isn't it? So this could literally be anyone's pole. It could be anyone's race. And I still feel like we've got a big dramatic thing to happen between now and the end of the season. Like, when I say that, I mean like a big, some kind of incident that takes out one of the leaders. So whether that be Hamilton or Verstappen or even both of them, I feel like something is going to come before the end of the season that's going to add even more spice to this championship. And it could very well be at Austin, Texas.
Yeah, interesting. Well, we'll be back next week to preview in full the American Grand Prix. In the meantime, take care.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.